A second chance. 3. During transmigration from one body to the next, the sinful soul is taken away by the order carriers of your marriage and put into a particular type of hellish life, in order to become accustomed to the condition in which he will live in his next body. Chapter 6. The residents of the spiritual sky. Sukadeva Goswami continued, when the order carriers of your marriage, the son of the Sangid, were thus forbidden, they replied, "Who are you, sirs, that have the audacity to challenge the jurisdiction of your marriage? Whose servants are you, where have you come from, and why are you forbidding us to touch the body of a Jamula? Are you demigods from the heavenly planets, are you sub-demigods, or are you the best of devotees? Your eyes are just like the petals of lotus flowers. Dressed in yellow silken garments, decorated with garlands of lotuses, and wearing very attractive helmets on your heads and earrings on your ears, you all appear fresh and youthful. Your four long arms are decorated with bows and quivers of arrows and with swords, clubs, conch shells, discs, and lotus flowers. Your effulgence has dissipated the darkness here with extraordinary illumination. Now, sirs, why are you obstructing us?" Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.32-36. Divine interference. The sins a Jamula had committed placed him within the jurisdiction of your marriage. The supreme judge appointed to consider the sins of the living entities. When forbidden to touch a Jamula, the order carriers of your marriage were surprised, because within all the three worlds no one had ever before hindered them in the execution of their duty. The Visnu Dutas were coming from Vaikuntha, and they appeared extraordinary, each with four arms. The servants of your marriage immediately received them with respect. They had no idea which planet the Visnu Dutas had come from, so they simply suggested, "You must have come from a very exalted planet, but why are you interfering with our business? We are Yamadutas. It is our duty to arrest every sinful man and a Jamula has committed misdeeds throughout his life. Now, at the end of his life, we are authorized to take him to Yamaraja, the son of Vivasvan, the Sangad, so why are you preventing us?" The most significant word used in verse 32 is Siddhasadama, which means the best of the perfect. In the Bhagavad Gita, 7.3, it is said, Manusainam Sakasri Sukhasid Yadati Siddhe, out of millions of persons, one may try to become Siddha, perfect, or, in other words, self-realized. A self-realized person knows that he is not the body, but the spiritual soul, Atam Brahmasmi. At present almost no one is aware of this fact, but one who understands this has attained perfection, and is therefore called Siddha. When one understands that the soul is part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, and one thus engages in the devotional service of the Supreme Soul, one becomes Siddhasadama. One is then eligible to live in Vaikuntha or Krishna Loka. The word Siddhasadama, therefore, refers to a pure devotee of the Lord. Since the Yamadutas are servants of your marriage, who is also one of the Siddhasadamas, they knew that a Siddhasadama is above the demigods and sub-demigods, and, Indeed, above all the living entities within this material world. The Yamadutas therefore inquired why the Visnudutas were preventing them from carrying out the orders of such an exalted soul as Yamaraja. It should also be noted that Ajamila was not yet dead, for the Yamadutas had been stopped before they could snatch the soul from his heart. Ajamila was simply on the verge of death as the argument progressed between the Yamadutas and the Visnudutas. The conclusion of that argument was to be a decision regarding who would claim the soul of Ajamila, spiritual beauty. The Visnudutas exactly resembled Lord Visnu. The Yamadutas had never seen them before, because the Yamadutas stay in an atmosphere where only sinful activities are executed. Therefore they were astonished at the presence of these beautiful personalities and said, "By your bodily features you appear to be very exalted gentlemen, and you have such celestial power, that you have dissipated the darkness of this material world with your effulgence. Why then should you endeavor to stop us from executing our duty?" It will be explained that the Yamadutas, the order carriers of Yamaraja, mistakenly considered Ajamila sinful. They did not know that, although he was sinful throughout his entire life, he was purified by constantly chanting the holy name of Narayana. The Visnudutas were so effulgent because they were residents of the spiritual world, where everyone and everything is self-effulgent. As Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, 15.6, Natadvasayatsirayonasasankonapavaka, my abode is not illuminated by the sun, the moon, fire, or electricity. The Yamadutas did not know where the Visnudutas had come from, but they could see that the Visnudutas were not ordinary, since they were so effulgent, they had four arms, and they were extremely beautiful. The dress and bodily features of the residents of Vaikuntha are accurately described in these verses. The residents of Vaikuntha, who are decorated with garlands and yellow silken garments, have four arms holding a disc, flower, club, and conch shell. Thus they exactly resemble Lord Visnu, except for one very prominent feature, the Kaustubha jewel, which the Lord wears on his chest. The residents of Vaikuntha have the same bodily features as Narayana, because they have attained the liberation of Sarupaya, but they nevertheless act as servants. All the residents of Vaikuntha Loka know perfectly well that their master is Narayana, or Krishna, and that they are all his servants. They are all self-realized souls who are Nitya Mukta, everlastingly liberated. Although they could conceivably declare themselves Narayana, they never do so, they always remain Krishna conscious, and serve the Lord faithfully. Such is the atmosphere of Vaikuntha Loka. Similarly, one who learns the faithful service of Lord Krishna through the KRSN, a consciousness movement will always remain in Vaikuntha Loka, and have nothing to do with the material world. Beyond the material world, in our conditioned state, we cannot know about the spiritual world. But the spiritual world exists. As Lord Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, 8.20, Paras Tasma Tu Bhavo Nayo, besides this inferior, material nature, there is another, superior nature. This material nature is one nature, comprised of millions and trillions of universes clustered together in one corner of the spiritual sky. We cannot even measure the sky covered by this one universe, within which there are innumerable planets, yet there are millions and trillions of universes in the entire material creation. And the entire material creation is only one-fourth of existence. In other words, this whole material world is existing in one-fourth of Krishna's energy. The other three-fourths comprise the spiritual sky. Unfortunate persons think that this planet is all in all, but this is frog philosophy. A frog in a well cannot understand anything beyond the well, and he measures everything in terms of his well. When he is told about the ocean, he see and not imagine it. Similarly, persons with such a frog's mentality imagine, God is like this, or God's kingdom is like that, or I'm God, or there is no God. But this is all foolishness. Chapter 7. Authorized discrimination. Sukadeva Goswami continued, being thus addressed by the messengers of Yamaraja, the servants of Vasudeva smiled, and spoke the following words in voices as deep as the sound of rumbling clouds. If you are actually servants of Yamaraja, you must explain to us the meaning of religious principles and the symptoms of irreligion. What is the process of punishing others? Who are the actual candidates for punishment? Are all persons engaged in fruitive activities punishable, or only some of them? Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.37-39. What the representatives of Dharma should know. The Yamadutas protested to the Visnudutas, "You are so exalted that it is not very good for you to interfere with our business." The Yamadutas were surprised to see that the Visnudutas, although exalted souls, were hindering the rule of Yamaraja. Similarly, the Visnudutas were also surprised that the Yamadutas, although claiming to be servants of Yamaraja, the supreme judge of religious principles, were unaware of the principles of religion. Thus the Visnudutas smiled, thinking, "What is this nonsense they are speaking? If they are actually servants of Yamaraja, they should know that a Jamila is not a suitable candidate for them to carry off." The Visnudutas began to speak in grave voices, "You claim to be the representatives of Dharmaraja, Yamaraja, the superintendent of death and the maintainer of religion, and you accuse us of interfering in your business, which he has entrusted to you. Therefore would you kindly explain what is Dharma, or religion, and what is Adharma, or irreligion? If you are actually representatives of Yamaraja, then you can answer this question." This inquiry put by the Visnudutas to the Yamadutas is most important. A servant must know the instructions of his master. The servants of Yamaraja claim to be carrying out his orders, and therefore the Visnudutas very intelligently asked them to explain religious and irreligious principles. A Vaisnava knows these principles perfectly well, because he is well acquainted with the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord says, Sarva Dharman Paratyajayamam Ekam Saranam Vraja. Give up all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. Therefore, surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the actual principle of religion. Those who have surrendered to the demands of material nature instead of to Krishna are all impious, regardless of their material position. Unaware of the principles of religion, they do not surrender to Krishna, and therefore they are considered sinful rascals, the lowest of men, and fools bereft of all knowledge. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, 7.15, Namam Deskritino Mudha, Prapadayant Naradhima, Maya Parlajnana, Azuram Bhavramas Rita. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are the lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons do not surrender unto me. The question posed by the Visnudutas was very suitable. One who represents someone else must fully know that person's mission. The devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement must therefore be fully aware of the mission of Krishna and Lord Caitanya and the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, otherwise they will be considered foolish. Lord Caitanya Mahaprabhu, who has said, Yai Krishna Tattva Veta, Sai Guruhe, one must know Krishna then he can become a guru. Not just anyone can become a guru. Thus the Visnudutas challenged the Yamadutas, if you are truly representatives of Dharmaraja, then you must explain what is religion, and what is irreligion. That should be the criterion for determining who is actually representative of religion. It is not that everyone should be accepted as religious, or as a guru. Widespread ignorance has given rise to many persons calling themselves God, representing so much nonsense in the name of Dharma. When someone says, I'm God, or I have become God by mystic yoga, one should challenge him. In America, a man claimed, I'm God, everyone is God, and thus gathered disciples. One day he was suffering from a tooth ash, and I asked him, what kind of God are you, that you are suffering so much from a tooth ash? Only a lunatic or a cheater claims, I'm God. Officers of law enforcement, one who has the power to punish others should not punish everyone. There are innumerable living entities, most of whom are in the spiritual world and are Nitya Mukta, everlastingly liberated. There is no question of judging these liberated living beings. Only a small fraction of the living entities, perhaps 1/4, are in the material world. And the major portion of the living entities in the material world, minus 8 million of the 8,400,000 forms of life, are lower than human beings. They are not punishable, for under the laws of material nature they are automatically evolving. Human beings, who are advanced in consciousness, are responsible for their actions, but not all humans are punishable. Those engaged in advanced pious activities are beyond punishment. Only those who engage in sinful activities are punishable. Therefore the Visnudutas particularly inquired about the criteria Yamaraja uses to determine who is punishable, and who is not. How is one to be judged? What is the basic principle of authority? These are the questions raised by the Visnudutas. The Yamadutas felt that they were faultless because they were following the orders of Yamaraja, who himself is faultless. Just because a magistrate has to direct the punishment of those who transgress the law does not mean the magistrate is a criminal. He is a representative of the government. Similarly, although Yamaraja has jurisdiction over the regions of hell and deals with all sinful persons, he is a pure representative of Krishna, and simply executes the order of his master. A police constable is supposed to know the law, and whom to arrest for breaking the law. If he arrests anyone and everyone, then he himself is a criminal. He may not arrest the law-abiding citizens. Similarly, the Yamadutas cannot take away just anyone and everyone to the court of Yamaraja. They can take only the non-devotees, to be punished for their sinful acts. Yamaraja has especially cautioned the Yamadutas not to approach Vaisnavas. However, because Ajamila had been very sinful, the Yamadutas could not understand why he should not be considered a criminal and be brought to Yamaraja for punishment. Devotees and demons. There are two classes of people in this material world. Those who are servants of God, called devas or suras, and those who are servants of maya, illusion, called asuras. In the spiritual world, however, there is only one class, because the inhabitants are all servants of God. Therefore the spiritual world is called absolute. There is no disagreement in the spiritual world, as the center is Krishna, or God, and everyone there is engaged in his service out of love, not as a paid servant. A paid servant will serve in proportion to the money he receives, but in Vaikuntha there is no question of being a paid servant. Everyone is liberated, and everyone is as opulent as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but everyone is still a servant. In the material world people serve out of need, but in the spiritual world everyone serves out of love. There is no need for anything, because everything there is complete. The Brahma Samhita says that in the spiritual world there are kalpavriksha, or desire trees, from which one can get anything he desires. In the material world, service is forced upon everyone. If someone does not render service, he will starve. Even a king has to work, what to speak of the poor man. Under the direction of the Supreme Lord, the material energy makes everyone into a dancing dog. The master says, "Please dance," and the dog dances, because he knows that unless he performs, he will starve. Whether in the material world or the spiritual world, everyone is a servant, but here people are under the impression that they are masters. The head of the family thinks, "I'm the master of my wife and children." But in fact he is serving each and every member of his family. The state executive officer thinks, "I'm the king or I'm the president," but actually he is the servant of the citizens. Servitude is his position, and unless he serves the citizens according to their expectations, he will be deposed. or fail to win re-election. In the material world, everyone is trying to become master of all he surveys, and thus there is competition on every level between self-acclaimed gods, between heads of state, even between friends and family members. In this illusory competition to be master, everyone fails. Mahatma Gandhi was respected as the father of India, but after all he was just a servant, and when one man didn't like his service, Gandhi was killed. Similarly, President Kennedy was a very popular president, but somebody saw some discrepancy in his service, and he was also killed. No one is really the master here. Everyone is either a servant of Maya, illusion, or a servant of God. Everyone has to obey the government laws. Under the spell of illusion, however, the criminal thinks, "I do not accept the government laws." Yet when he is caught, he is forced to obey the government laws in the prison house. He has no choice. Similarly, we are all servants of God, but the demoniac class of men, Asuras, do not care about God and God's laws. These rascals think that there is no God, or that everyone is God, or that they themselves are God. But such gods must also follow the laws of God in the form of birth, death, disease, and old age. Only persons who are totally illusioned refuse to serve God. Instead of voluntarily rendering service to God, they are the slaves of Maya, the illusory energy of God. A person who is haunted by ghosts speaks all kinds of nonsense. Similarly, when a living entity is haunted by Maya, or engrossed by the illusory effects of the material nature, he also talks foolish nonsense, and the most foolish talk is to claim that he is God. Among the two classes of men, the divine, devas, and the demoniac, Asuras, there is an ongoing struggle. The Asuras are always rebelling against God, and the devas are always surrendering to God. In the story of Prahlada Maharaja, we see that even among family members there are devas and Asuras. Prahlada Maharaja's father, Hiranyakasipu, was an Asura, whereas Prahlada Maharaja was a deva. Naturally, a father is affectionate toward his child, but because Hiranyakasipu was a demon, he became the enemy of his son. That is the nature of demons. Of course, even a tiger has affection for her cubs, and so at first Hiranyakasipu showed affection for Prahlada Maharaja, who was a very well-mannered and attractive child at 5 years old. One day Hiranyakasipu asked his son, "My dear boy, what is the best thing you have learned in school? Tell me." Prahlada Maharaja replied, "One should sacrifice everything to realize God. This human form of life is the best opportunity we have for making spiritual progress, and it must be utilized for realizing God." Hiranyakasipu angrily inquired from his son's teachers, "Why have you taught all this nonsense to my boy?" They fearfully answered, "Sir, we did not teach these things to this boy. He is naturally inclined toward God, so what can we do?" As soon as he gets the opportunity, he begins to teach God consciousness to the other boys in the class. In the absence of his teachers, Prahlada Maharaja would immediately stand up on the bench and address his friends, "My dear boys, this life is not for enjoying sense gratification. It is for realizing God. Do not forget this." Similarly, we have taken up this preaching mission because people in general are interested only in immediate sense gratification, which is not good for them. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.4, Lord Drsabhadeva says, "Nunam pramata kurupvikarma yad indriya pratya apranoti." Simply for sense gratification, people are committing so many sinful activities. They are just like madmen. A madman does not know what he is doing. Materialistic persons are so much engrossed in their pursuit of sense gratification that they have become maddened and commit all kinds of sins. Lord Drsabhadeva says that the materialistic way of life is very risky. For those who indulge in sense gratification, Krishna gives the facility, forcing them to take birth again in the material atmosphere. A monkey has very good facility for enjoying sex. In some ways a monkey is renounced. He lives naked in the forest. He eats only fruit. But his nature is that he must have at least 36 wives for sex enjoyment. So-called renunciants who wear the cloth of a sadhu, but secretly enjoy illicit sex with women, are just like monkeys. This is demoniac,